The yellow flag has been shown. The red flag is being taken away. The lights will go to red.
Away they go. Good start from Danny Pedrosa. Whenever he never says that. Here we go. Valentino Rossi had a good start.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 335 for Wednesday, the 5th of September, 2012. My name is Martin Darlington. I am in the north of Wales, in the Europe, and I would like to say... And I can hear an echo coming all the way from Northern California in his log cabin, surrounded by beavers and deer and stuff. I believe is one Jim Race.
I believe that would be sans. Well, I'm sure there's some beavers and deer out there. This is kind of a funny call, Martin, because you and I just got done with a call with James Whittam, and it was a fantastic chat, and I really, really enjoyed that. Today is we're doing this call a little bit early because we didn't, frankly, have a whole lot of racing over the weekend. And Jules and I, we didn't neglect to talk about Moscow World Superbike, but we ran out of
time. Yeah,
we ran out of energy, to be honest.
Yeah.
Now, I should note that that was not a Foster's, ladies and gentlemen. That was a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale in a can, which is kind of weird. It's the first one that I've ever had. Something just a little bit different. We do have, obviously, we will have the James Whittam interview in this show, and certainly one to look forward to. It's the first time that we've ever done an interview, as far as I know, for the show, with two hosts talking to a guest. So,
and it's definitely the first time that one of the hosts has had to leave to go and catch a spider. So his wife and daughter can go in the front room and watch television. It was actually quite large. It was probably a good 3-inch diameter if you include its legs. So it was a big hairy thing.
It didn't carry off one of your felines or anything like that. But
No. And I'd like to say it was very humanely caught and released into the community outside.
Was there screaming going on in the other room? Is that why you had to dash off?
There was some, yes.
Okay.
I got a text message saying, spider, come now.
All right. Well, Sharon and Mia, I hope that for Motopod that we have taken care of your potential injuries and any danger has been alleviated. Again, we do have the James Whittam interview. We will have, I hope, another interview. And I will just leave it at that. We will fit it in somewhere. I think it's going to happen before the week is out. Today is Monday. Labor Day. The show is for Wednesday, which is probably when it will get all put together. Today's Monday, Labor Day in the United States, which is a holiday. So in unusual circumstances, Martin, I'm talking to you in the middle of the day and it's your late evening.
Yep. It's 9:45, but, and after our call with James, of course, one thing that didn't get mentioned was World Supersport, but,
Okay. So
there wasn't much to mention, really.
Yeah. And we'll go into some minor detail about that. Do want to say massive, massive thanks to a donator from this week, Robert Baxter. Welcome to the Motopod, like favorite friends of the show. Well done, sir. And thanks a ton. Very, very solid, solid donation. Do want to mention some errata from last week, and I screwed this up and I will take full responsibility. I included for Jules the incorrect. Jules is the person that puts together a show, does all the show notes. I have the wrong URL for the LCR Inspire Mag, which is super cool. Definitely
work. It really is. No, I subscribe to it now and it's very cleverly and slickly put together, but I still haven't worked out how to turn the music off.
There's a button there somewhere, Martin. So we do have the proper, we did fix the show link last week. Although some of you, probably the folks that are on Facebook or not Facebook, but, iTunes may have got the incorrect one. So the correct one will be in this week's show. And that would be inspire-lcr.com, and not the one that we had last week. So, that's something to keep an eye on. And there's going to be some really cool stuff coming up on that. Hopefully they will keep that venture going. We talked with James a bit about the Brno lap time, so I think we could probably pass over that. We should probably bop a bit through the World Superbike stuff, QP and whatnot, without going into too much detail, Martin, because I think we talked an awful lot about World Superbike with James. Or you know what? Let's do this the other way around. Let's go ahead and play the interview with James. You and I will keep in mind the things that we talked about, and then we will allow us to foreshorten what we talk about when it comes to World Superbike.
Absolutely. And it's so fresh in my mind because it finished minutes ago. I might actually remember what we've talked about.
Yeah. All right. Let's roll that, sir. Excellent. Hey, you want to talk about some racing, James?
Yeah. We're talking about Moscow, are we?
Yeah, I think so. First off, for me, what did you think of the circuit? It had some flowing bits, and it had some other stuff that was a bit start-stop. And I guess my first question was, did you do it as a flyaway, or do you and Jack go?
No, we went, and I've got to say that it was there's very little flowing about it, really. I actually looked at a map before we went to try and get made around the shape of the circuit and the sort of nature of it, and it looked absolutely fantastic shape, some ups and downs, bright crests, etc. But actually, when you got there and realised that there was 16 or 17 corners, depending how you categorise them, because a couple of the kinks they called a corner, there was 16 or 17 corners within a 2.4 mile track. I mean, it was tight.
Yeah,
it really was.
Having said that,
the actual shape of it was all right. It was quite a physical circuit, chatting with the boys. The bikes on each side for a lot of the time are flicking from one side to another where you had to be quite accurate. It was hard work, I think. I think for a 250 GP bike, you know, a two-stroke, it would have been fantastic. But for superbikes, I'm not sure whether, you know, for the majority of the lap, they're in second gear. They didn't really get out of second gear that much.
That is so funny you say that, because my thought when I was going to ask you that question was, on a superbike, it was a bit of a start-and-go thing. But I said, what James is going to say, or what at least is going to be in his mind, is that on a 250 GP bike, it would be a damn fun little circuit.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
Martin, I'm sure you've got a bunch. I've got a little list here. I do want to ask you, James, about Ray and Cheka and their little get together. I don't think anybody really blamed anybody, even though Carlos was a bit miffed, but I think that may have been because of the circumstances. What are your thoughts?
You know what? That happened on exactly the same crash that happened in practice as well, with Ayama doing it to Ray. Only Ray going down that time. And it's one of those where you're coming off the only real straight on the circuit and down to a second gear left. Therefore, it's by far and away the best overtaking chance or place on the track. And I didn't see it as anybody's fault at all, really. I mean, Ray didn't actually know he was there, so I don't know, it was. I called it a bit of a 50-50 to me, really. You know, Chek is a gentleman, he knows that if he had been partially raised doing that, he didn't do it on purpose. You know, I don't think, there didn't seem to be anything that went up afterwards where they were blaming each other.
Yeah, right.
I was thinking about, in race two, where we had a similar sort of situation with Max bumping, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but Max seemed to clip Johnny as he came past. And I remember you saying, James, that once you've missed your breaking point, there is nowhere to go. Obviously desperately trying to stop. Leon seems to have a habit at the moment of being a bit of a magnet for other people's crashes. It was nice to see at least Max ran across and was obviously very apologetic. Have you spoken to Leon? Was he accepting?
I talked to him after the race. And, I mean, Leon is another one. He understands what the job is. He was really fed up with his complete run of bad luck, really. But he wasn't. I mean, Leon's, he's you know, philosophical. He's been in the job a long time, and he understands. I mean, the way I saw it was, Do you know that Max run as one of the riders who runs one of those shields, those the front brake shield thing?
Yep.
Yeah.
To stop you running in the back of somebody. Like he was because he turned one at Phillip Island. He had a big deal there beginning of this year.
Was it last right.
year? Last year, and since then he's run this shield. So I don't really know what happened. Somehow he got tangled up with. Through his own fault and been too close, he's got tangled up with Ray, then he's had to let the brake off, or somehow the brake's gone off, and at that point then he's gone maybe 2 or 3 metres further on than what he should have done off the brakes, and then at that point you're either going to go straight on and miss everybody or you're going to clobber somebody who's in your way. So there wasn't a lot after that he could have done about it, you know.
And the only footage I've seen of him and Johnny's coming together is Max's online, the on-bike camera. And it just seemed like a really poor misjudgment because Johnny doesn't move. He's going straight and Max just seems to be, he's just too close to him.
He just goes too close, that's it. And that's where it all starts. So, yeah, I mean, I see it's completely Max's fault. He obviously didn't mean to do it and it doesn't happen every weekend. So, I mean, you know, the thing is about racing, you've got to be, I was always, I've knocked people down and people knocked me down. And if anybody can make a mistake, especially when you're trying that hard and not, you know, everything's going on around you. However, if one particular rider is doing it, you know, every week, well, then it's an issue. If, you know, if somebody who, you know, who doesn't make an habit of it, you've got to sort of take it on chin and say, well, you know, I've done it to people and, you know, by accident, so. I don't think any mega repercussions of that. Just the fact that Liam was unlucky again, you know.
You know, I actually see Johnny taking a fair amount of stick online, which is usually a complete line of bullshit, frankly, as far as I'm concerned. But with his jump up, if you will, to riding what may or may not be a factory bike with the Repsol squad, that's quite a move, and it will be interesting to see him running out there.
Yeah, I mean, he's had one test so far, I think, but, I mean, it's about time. I think a lot of that has come off the back of the Suzuka 8-hour, because that's still held in mega esteem by especially Honda, and I think, you know, getting a test at least is by way of a sort of thank you for that, but you know, I think why not? He's a good rider. It's very important these days in MotoGP that you get all the rider aids that the bike has got working for you. That's really, it's really important to be with a good team, and I think that will be a good one for him. There's no reason, as far as I can see, that he shouldn't get to make it work.
Yeah, there's kind of a question whether or not they'll swap livery and move Casey's bike onto Brattle and bring Brattle's bike up to run with Johnny. It's kind of a whisper at this point, but it's an interesting thought, you know, to preserve the engines for Casey on his return.
Yeah. Well, I know, but what is happening with Casey? Because he's not coming back. Obviously, he's why would he? The championship.
Oh, trust me, James. If you're Casey Stoner, if there's one thing you want to do is you want to come back at PI and kick everybody's ass so nobody can say shit.
Yeah, I guess that's what you'd want. But, I mean, he doesn't... I don't know. He's never really fitted in. And back in at 26 or 27, whatever he is, you know, you'd think, you know, he's already sort of made the decision, I guess.
Yeah. Well,
that's... But for me, if he comes back at Phillip Island and kicks everybody's ass, you'd be thinking, well, why am I retiring? You know what I mean? It's a weird...
True. One person I want to ask about, and Martin, I'm going to jump on you here, or jump ahead of you. Giuliano, the Lummox, as you christened him for Moscow.
The what?
You christened Giuliano the Lummox at Moscow.
Yeah, no, he's a big lad. A Lummox is a Yorkshire word for kind of just somebody who's a bit big and dopey. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's trust me, that's jumped the pond years ago, and I just laughed when I heard it.
Yeah, I like the word. It's a good word. And I don't think he's a Lummox, but he's a big lad, you know, and he looks big on the bike. He's riding well there, actually. Yeah. It surprised me, did Moscow, that throughout practice and qualifying, the Ducati seemed to be the bike. I know Leon Haslam told me that the two second-year sections, the first sector, and then the sector after the short back straight, if you like, and then they go into the second gear sector. He said both of those sectors, you'd lose 3/4 of a second to anybody under the car just because of things that appear on the side. A lot easier to sort of control the sort of throttle in them situations, you know. And they've been quite superior as a bike for that track throughout practice and qualifying. And then in the races, they did nothing.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see what that was about, really, other than the fact that I remember I was a little place like Mallory and Cadwell Club Circuit. You always got real fast 250 men could always, in practice, go really quick, sometimes quicker than the fastest superbikes, just because of the nature of the circuit. But in a race, you would always beat them because where they need to be fast, you right. slow them down.
Yep.
And where, you know, where you are fast, you always get past them. So I think there was a little bit of that going on, you know. We saw a lot of people flying past, you know, Checker and Juliana down the straight. So.
You know, there's a really cool crest going into, I think it's turn 12 there. And there's a lot of people that that probably don't know and looked at that and said, well, that's a, you know, it's a kind of a BS part of the track. But I looked at that and it reminded me of the little crest that you have going into the final turn at Laguna, which I know that you've ran at. Those things are really challenging because it lightens the bike up and you really have to be on it.
Yeah. You mean the one into the second gear left off the end of the back?
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. Yep. That's the one.
Yeah. That looked in equal amounts, really, really good fun.
Yeah.
But also quite tricky as well. You know, you could see the bikes going light and then you really have to wait till a little bit of weight had settled before they could properly hook it in, you know.
Yeah. And then those kind of turns are serious challenges because if somebody there's two different ways to approach something like that. You can get off the gas or on the brakes beforehand and then power down the backside of it, or you can try and carry your speed through it and be too light and run wide.
Yeah, that's it. Most of them seemed, we went out to watch there, and most of them seemed, you didn't get much of that, I'll tell you, that you got from the side of the track, you actually got the fact that there was no weight on the bikes until, you know, because most of those guys were actually going really fast at it and floating over the hill maybe and then waiting until it could turn in. Yeah. Quite a good place to watch, actually, really good.
Yeah, I think it's a great corner and it's one of those ones that actually provides a unique challenge. So for the fans that are out there, they're looking at that corner thinking it's Mickey Mouse. It's not. It's a very good challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, too.
James, the comment was made that the track was quite abrasive, which I found interesting considering that one of the problems Tom Sykes has had this season and last is destroying tyres, and he certainly seems to have got on top of that. But if it was abrasive on the tyres, have they made massive steps with the Kawasaki, or is it Tom's style, or was it actually smoother than people thought?
I think a little bit of both. I think that he's not rushing at things as much. I think he's settled down. Because you know he's realised that he's quick and he doesn't have to do anything, you know, too aggressive. And I also think they made big steps with the bike as well. You know, the bike, for the first time this last sort of 3 or 4 months, this bike now is seen. You got a feeling in the paddock that anybody drive it, and you never got that feeling before. Last year you didn't get that feeling. You got the feeling that Tom was making it work despite the fact it wasn't brilliant, and only really when it was a damp or if your tyre choice came into the equation. Whereas now it's seen as, you know, front running bike and the sort of buzz around the paddock is that anybody put their ass on it, you know?
Yeah, and it was fantastic for me because I've got Melandri and Sykes in my fantasy road racing team. So I've just leapfrogged Jules. It was, I didn't do too well with Shaky Burn and BSB, but hopefully he'll mend. But it was good to see him maintaining that gap in the first race and in the second, you know, being pretty close to Marco Melandri consistently and not dying off. But my medal for the second race was Johnny, having been almost wiped. Well, he was wiped out by Eugene's unfortunate high side. And then that bike was distinctly second hand with only one foot peg. To come in seventh, I thought was...
I'll tell you what, he didn't have to pick it up quick. But Jonathan is... He's a tough cookie, you know. He's determined, that sort of motocrosser, so he's tough. But it did surprise me. He was able to. He actually only lost about. It was 20. I was actually looking at it just because I wanted to see how far he was behind. It was 28 seconds off the winner, Melandri. But I think he was probably maybe 4 or 5. I think he only probably lost low 20s of seconds in that crash. that's picking it up and getting going.
Yeah, yeah. No, it did remind me sort of that a couple of years ago at Monza when he crashed and his bike leapt the air fence, and he stood up in a cloud of dust, looked round, and it was like, where's the bike gone? Gents, I'm going to have to leave you chatting for a minute. I'm on spider catching duty. I'll be back in about a minute.
No, see,
you know that myth that all the feminists say that the women could exist without men? They wouldn't. They'd all be in the corner of a room screaming, surrounded by a single small spider. Apparently it's a tarantula.
Yeah,
I'll be back in a sec.
My little girl doesn't like spiders.
No, no, neither do
we.
No, we got three cats. They'll eat them. But right, I'll all yes. Right,
go off.
See you on your back. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I'll be. See you in a minute.
All right, James, and well, Martin's gone off and probably going to get eaten by a spider about a millimeter long. I do want to ask you about what I kind of have in my head is the Effenbert mess. It's been kind of weird this year. I mean, and it was a team that started off very strong with four riders, which was probably maybe overreaching, but they've had some weird missteps along the way.
Yeah, the whole thing's been weird. I mean, just not being there in Moscow, not playing mechanics, not being able to put bikes out. The riders, and then say that they're more successful riders underachieving. It's just, you know, it's all been a bit weird, really.
Have you chatted with them, or are they not talking, or what?
No, nobody's saying very much at all, and I don't know why that is, really, whether that's because, I don't know why that is. We tried to get hold of them and have a chat with them quite actively at Silverstone, and just nothing. We couldn't. I don't know if there's going to be any legals about it, but no, I'll be the same.
I think the bottom line is it's probably funding, which is
absolutely
what makes the world go around. And I guess in the same vein, although not as weird, I'm surprised at this far into the season, and I don't think it's because of the caliber of riders, frankly, that Fixie Suzuki is not being more productive.
I mean, it's a fact they've had a lot of bad luck. Things have gone wrong. They've had issues with, I think now they're doing their own engines in-house. The bikes seem a little bit quicker. But yeah, I mean, they have had bad luck and things are wrong that shouldn't have gone wrong. But yeah, I mean, for me, they're the underachievers in the paddock, really. And it's difficult to see why. They're a team that's, every member of that team is very experienced. I've worked with a few of them before. Good team management, and you tell me, because I don't know. And the thing is, last couple of rounds at Silverstone, they'd really, both John and Leon had seemed to make some kind of breakthrough. They were doing their engines themselves. They seemed to have around a 10-day horsepower. It was quite positive at Silverstone with the noises coming out of the pit. And then struggled in Moscow big time. I mean, I don't know. They had engine issues. I mean, but I don't know. Yeah, they definitely underachieved. And I feel a little bit sorry for John, really, because he's never really had a chance to get a good run at things. And he seems to have been on the back foot most of the season, you know. And I mean, racing goes like that, you know, yourself. But, and you know, there's no doubt John has, and Leon have the capacity and the skill to run somewhere near the front, and they just haven't had the chance to do that, you know.
Frankly, I would love to see John go back to BSB and win the title that he so closely missed against Tommy Hill last year.
Six thousandths of a second.
What John did last year was quite incredible when you look at it.
Yeah.
He went another circuit. I mean, and it's not, the thing is, you know, it's not like doing a world championship where all the circuits, by and large, big, wide, fast flowing, big runoff. That's not the same in Britain. You know, yeah, Donington's the world championship venue. But you get to places like even Brands that we all know and love, that's a quirky circuit, is that, with its issues. But then places like Knock Hill and Oldham Park and Cadwell, and the man went there and he completely did his job. And he gained a lot of respect from just about everybody in the paddock and the race going public for what he was able to achieve quietly. He got on with his job, and you know, he was fast around places that he'd never seen before Friday.
Well,
you
know, I think what some of the Brits forget or don't know is that, you know, because we kind of make fun of what we call the goat trails that are your circuits here over here in the States. But frankly, the club racing circuits over here, there are many of them that are carbon copies, although in different directions, of some of your national circuits. So that's the kind of thing that John grew up on. And so for him to be able to do that, and now, and I agree 100%, props to him, because he did not waste any time in getting to grips, no pun intended, with the UK circuits, but a little bit of a head start, maybe.
Yeah, you know, they did everything right. They went and they'd do a track day. They did everything he could do to get himself prepared, but that's still a big ask.
Yeah.
This ship is really competitive. You know, it is competitive. So, no, I have nothing but admiration for him. And, you know, he lost his finger, he came back. I had Eurosport and myself interviewed him a load of times. I've talked to him on the grid, and he was just a flipping gentleman. Quite funny, a little bit quirky, as you know, but nice. Always had a nice word to say, quite funny. If I took the piss out of him a little bit, he'd be on the chain and had to go back. You know, he didn't get all precious. You know, nice one.
And it's worth remembering, I think, that he did his hand at Brno on a wild card in the MotoGP, and then obviously came back, and he missed at least one race, didn't he, after that crash?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at the championship, he actually should have won it. Brands, he had an electrical issue that dropped him out. He missed a little bit of... he actually didn't go out because it started raining in warm-up, and then his bike laying down, which he would have found out if he'd gone out in warm-up. There's a lot of little things. But even, you know, starting that last lap, when he was going up to Eddie Tommy Hill, I honestly thought, and I think that John thought, that he had the speed to do it, because you look, it took every one of Tommy's passes was just a little bit of a wing and a prayer and a bit of a, you know, having a go. John's passes were pretty direct and pretty definite, and he knew he could make them. So, you know, even going into that last lap, I didn't want to say it, because obviously, I'm a Brit, and I try and say impartial, but I thought, well, Tommy's a Brit, and I'd like to see Tommy win it. But I honestly thought John could win it, because he just looked more confident with his passing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
without doubt.
That actually leads into a rather cryptic note that I think my producer, Jules Chisek, put into our show notes here. It says, ask James Witham about the Brno crash and fire. Does that ring a bell to anything?
It rings a bell about the biggest crash ever had. Kenny Roberts' Medinas.
Okay.
And first lap of the 1999 GP.
Were you in
Brno?
Okay.
I flew myself off. I don't know what he was. Going maybe about, I don't know,
one. No. I've seen this video. That was
This is the one where you set fire to Czechoslovakia, wasn't it?
Yeah,
basically.
I can't actually take any responsibility for the fact that it was the Chuckle Brothers blooming Keystone Cops fire brigade that tried to put it out, and they didn't have the equipment to do it. I thought the tank ruptured, it went on fire, I broke the pelvis, and I tell you what, as I was being stretched off, the track was already well ablaze.
Yeah.
Too funny. Question.
Pelvis, not a nice thing to break either.
No.
No, it was, I didn't enjoy that much.
Yeah. So you got to give some very serious props to Marco Melandri, somebody that we were looking at a few years ago, picturing back on the Ducati in his psychiatrist days, for currently leading the championship. Just an outstanding recovery.
Yeah, and I tell you what, you know, when you watch it and the feeling now in the paddock, well, I've got anyway, is that he's definitely in the driving seat. You can see signs, especially his riding, that Gadji's kind of rattled, you know. They don't like him to that. After all, them boys, you know.
Oh, yeah, they love each other.
I'd like to stab him in the eye with a sharp, pointy thing. Kind of love. Definitely, I think that Melandri's in the driving seat now. and the barrel's been working good for him. He's got a turn of speed. You know, I think he's the man to be in the championship now.
Yeah, but I mean, just frankly, to me, for him, I'm super happy for him. I mean, he had a downward spiral, and not a spiral, if you will, just kind of a slide. And now he's got one of the best looking girlfriends in the paddock, and he's looking on a possible world championship. And that's got to be.
Yeah. Do you know what? It is a turnaround, because I remember, I don't know how long, when he came off the. What happened? He ended up on a Kawasaki somehow in MotoGP and not done so much with it. He hadn't done a full season. Then he was out of a job. And I remember him coming, he had to come to the bike show at the NEC that I work at. I've worked there for the last 6 or 7 years,
to the
full 11-day duration of the show. And he was hanging about like a bad smell for about 4 days because he was Nolan. I'm thinking Nolan had him over.
Yeah.
Is he wear Nolan?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. So he was over on the Nolan stand. And I tell you what, it was weird, you know, because it was like nobody was bothered he was there, or, you know, he was coming and talking to us because he was bored and kind of, you know, and he did have that sort of spent force feel about it, you know.
Yeah.
And then he sort of rediscovered himself and he's got, well, yeah, you've got to take it out of him, man.
Yeah. You know, it's really funny, James, and I agree with you, and it's so nice to see him back. You would chuckle, and I wish that you would make it over to Indy for the GP one of these days, because it's amazing how riders can walk around within the circuit, walk around on the streets, and even though the place is full of, you know, 75,000 mad bike fans, nobody gives them, you know, they might recognize them and nod or smile, but they don't get mobbed like they do in Europe. It's completely different. It's amazing.
Yeah, he is. I mean, to be honest, but I don't know. You see people, there's not that many people within bike racing that it would ever be an issue, you know. I mean, if you're a proper film star or, you know, a rock star or whatever, yeah, then you can see it being intrusive. But I don't ever see, you know, maybe in a paddock, you know, you're going to get bike enthusiast there who want to talk to you and it's going to impact on your life, but I don't think, you know, that's a good thing about bike racing. It's still only quite a small kind of, you know, world. It's not like you're becoming a rock star that's instantly recognized by everybody, are you? So,
or Formula One.
Oh, yeah,
where half of the paddock guests are corporate ones, aren't they, in Formula One? Oh, so they don't really know anything about it.
Actually, to be honest, Formula One, I was watching it at the weekend, and that's probably, because Spa's a brilliant circuit, and that's one of my favourites, I wanted to watch it anyway, because I just love anything racing around there, it's pretty good, to be honest. It wasn't a bad race, and that's the first time I've thought that in about 5 years.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, but, I, you know, I still don't get a lot of it. There was actually a bit of passing, though, so...
For me, it just goes on too long. It's like 2 hours.
I think so.
One last question, James, and then I think we'll let you go, unless Martin has some, and I'm sure he does. But
it's more of a comment than a question, but yeah, go on.
Okay. I know that during your racing career, you had some shit luck, and I think every racer does, and it is part of the business. But have you ever seen a racer in recent memory, or even going farther back in your ancient memory, because you and I are getting old, that has had worse luck than one Ben Spies?
I just knew. How did I know? As soon as you started that story, I thought, Ben, I haven't, no. And I mean, I don't know what. I haven't. he's having worse luck than half of me. He's not having a good time with it. Yeah. But I mean, like you say, you get it. And that's, in a lot of ways, you know, you've got to look at that, the sort of Melandri thing again, where it's the ones that can get on that and keep going that are ones that are going to, you know,
right,
stay there, isn't it? You know, stay at the top. So, but yeah, I mean, he's not having a good time, is he?
Yeah, well,
that fits in perfectly with the comment I was going to make, that I was chatting to a mate after the weekend of this race, so last week, and he said he got the impression that Leon Haslam is to Ben Spies and Melandri to Lorenzo. They seem to be, you know, Haslam is the Spies of World Superbike. He's got a good bike. He's a great rider. We know he is, but he just keeps... you know, I mean, I don't think he's quite hitting the same bad luck as Ben. But and speaking of Ben, any more on the Ben to BMW rumor, which seemed to be awaiting an announcement, and now it's possibly gone a bit cold?
Yes, that's exactly how I see it. It was a done deal, and I mean, even people like Fogarty was chatting with David Tadoza, and Tadoza was saying, no, he's done. He's definitely done. It'll be announced this next week. And now it just seems to have gone off, you know, gone off the cold. So, yeah, I don't know. I've no more news than you.
The latest rumor I've heard with the what's happening with Bautista and Gresini is that they might have made an approach to Ben. So I wonder if Fausto Gresini just pushed his oar in, which of course would kind of screw up the other part of that rumor that was Johnny Ray would be on the Gresini bike. But I guess they'll see how he does in the next couple of rounds of MotoGP.
Exactly. Yeah. But I did hear that. I did hear there might be an opening for Spies at Gresini. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, but. I don't know. It'd be good to see him back in Superbike, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, frankly, when you come through and whirlwind your way through, win the championship in your first season and then dash out, you know, it's not a question mark. It's a, well, come on, stick around here.
Yeah. Well, I think so. I mean, he was completely dominant. I mean, he was special, very, very special. I do think that right at the front, he's possibly slightly more competitive. I mean, it was competitive then, but I don't think it's any easier than it was then anyway. It was class on that Yamaha.
I mean, even from the beginning of the season, the first race at PI, when he got punted off, I think, by Max, and you were like, oh, shit, this is going to be a long season, and then came back and won race two. I'm like, okay, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt he's a clever lad. And I think, you know, it might be just one of those situations where he wants to get on something where he knows he and the bike are competitive and get back to, you know, stood on a rostrum and flipping and enjoying his racing again. Maybe it's that. I don't know. Because it would be for me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the other rumour is that he's going to be a test rider for Suzuki next year with the odd wild car.
That was so...
But what a risk to then come with Suzuki back in 2014 in MotoGP when he could go to BMW, have a year in World Superbikes, help develop the MotoGP effort. Look what they've done in Superbikes in such a short space of time.
Yeah.
I've got to put money on BMW being ahead of Suzuki in 2014 if they both end up entering the MotoGP, with full prototypes.
Yeah, and the thing is, BMW's got the dosh, haven't they? That's what it is.
What do you think? Give me your 30-second synopsis on the CRTs.
Oh, man. it took me flipping 6 months to get my head around. The claiming rule and all that, when you can actually claim it, it's just a bit of a weird thing. And I don't know. I detest racers that have two or three passes within the race. It becomes not a race anymore. And, for me, it hasn't worked unless everybody's on one.
Right.
You know,
right.
And maybe that is the way to go. Maybe street-based engines that it's quite possible to have a street-based engine that you can make, you know, 230 brake horsepower. I don't know.
Well, we just saw that at Indy. We had a couple of bikes, wild cards, which I think is very important. Wildcard CRTs to at least make the grid and to have a decent standing. One of them got in the points. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I don't know. But they need to do something. But for me, the CRT thing just ain't work.
There's an interesting comparison I actually have from a listener, Sheldon Gooby, who I'm going to guess is American. And I know Jim liked his name last week, but Sheldon's written in again, asking where the CRTs are in respect to World Superbike lap times. And using Bernot, Randy DiPugno, who is the quickest of the CRTs, is almost exactly a second faster than Marco Melandri on their fastest laps. And that's pretty much borne out throughout the race.
No, but is Bernot fastest lap against the fastest CRT bike?
Yeah.
Yeah, Melandri was about a second slower than Randy DiPugno on the fastest CRT.
Yeah, and that's with carbon brakes and with better tyres and with prototype chassis and more power. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you can't. There's not a lot of point in comparing a CRT bike to a superbike when they're not on the same sort of track at the same time. You know, the fact is, you're flipping waste on the top MotoGP bike. So what? And then anywhere you've got to have lots and lots of rules about how many engines you can have and what your piston speed's got to be and your bore compared to your stroke and all that. Oh, Jesus, and how much fuel you can have. You get into F1 realms then, you know what I mean? I like to see at least 28 or 25 bikes on a grid where it's not that difficult to produce a bike that's reasonably competitive and everybody's on the same tackle. You know what? That's got to be the best racing, right?
All right, so you remember the days of the transatlantic, right, James?
Yep.
So let's do the same thing just on a one-off over UK tracks with the CRT bikes and World Superbike bikes.
Right.
That'd be fun.
That would be fun, actually, yeah, especially not getting around a place like Mallory Park. Jesus. Which is, I actually went to watch the transatlantic in 78. I went to watch at Mallory Park and then went to watch at Oldham Park. And Steve Baker on a OW31 cleared off, right? And funny thing is, 2 weeks ago, I was at a classic festival, a Yamaha-themed classic festival at Donington, and I was riding a TZ500, a 78 TZ500 around
Donington. They let you on that.
Oh, mate, what a lovely thing. And I was following Stevie Baker on the same bike that I saw him race at Oldham Park. And it was, like, weird. It was a weird kind of thing, you know. He still rides fairly briskly as Stevie.
Did you stuff
him? Wow.
Did you stuff him?
What?
Did you stuff him?
I passed him, yeah. But only because I felt I had to do.
All right, listen, the night is getting on for both you gents, and I still have time to take with Martin. Actually fun, James. I think Martin and I didn't completely step on each other and hopefully didn't step on you too much. You be well, sir, and we will talk to you soon.
Spot on. Cheers, boys.
All right, late.
Cheers, James. Ta-da. Fantastic again to have James on the show. Not only is he so entertaining, but obviously his knowledge and the fact that he was there. I just laugh at the interview I did with him before they went. And you know, I said, are you going? Yep. You're looking forward to it? Yep. Do you know much about it? Nope. it just sums up. He's brilliant, James. And so thank you very much for that. And it was, again, at short notice. I texted him yesterday. And he's like, yep, give me a belt. And it's always very great supporter of MotoPod. And thank you, James. One thing we didn't mention was World Supersport. But if we just want to quickly talk about the bits of World Superbike we may not have mentioned, a weather hit. With Carlos Checa, Tom Sykes, Eugene Laverty and Leon Haslam on the front row. It was nice to see those guys up there. And interestingly, I was looking at the total leader laps. And after race two, Carlos Checa is still second, but way behind. Tom Sykes has led 142 laps this season. Carlos is second with 69, Biaggi third with 58, Melandri 35. And I think we've mentioned this before.
Yeah, we did.
And it's interesting that Marco, the important thing for Marco is he generally, when he is leading, it's at the end of the race. And that's the bit that counts. So
yeah, no doubt, but, no doubt. I mean, it was something that we were talking about earlier in the year. I know that Jules and I talked about it right after the Miller round, that Checa, despite having the best quote-unquote winning record, was not up there at the top of the championship. It's just kind of weird the way that works out.
Yeah, no, definitely. And after such a dominant season last year, I mean, he won the first three. Well, he crashed out the first race in Phillip Island, then won the second, won both at Imola. You know, he won first race at Salt Lake, but there are a lot of gaps in his, there have been a lot of DNFs. And well, that's been the problem, I think.
The bottom line inconsistency is racing, or switch those two around.
Yeah.
In racing is consistency. And there have been people that have been maligned in the past for being very consistent racers. Perfect example, Nicky Hayden, 2006, had a very consistent season. Won the championship. You have, and it's a silly axiom, but you know, to to finish first, and to finish first, when we say overall, you must first finish. So it is what it is. You don't see guys like Cheka as a classic example, or frankly, any of these guys not racing for wins. They want to win races, but if they have to take the opportunity to, quote unquote, salvage points, they will do so.
Yeah, well, that wasn't Carlos in his youth, though, was it? I mean, he was the original win it or bin it kind of guy.
Well, he was known as Carlos. What was it?
Careless Chucka.
Careless Chucka. And no longer that way. No. You know, we touched on it a bit in the Whittam interview, and I've seen more and more of it about people trying to blame Jonathan Rea for this entire array, no pun intended, of crashes. And frankly, I just don't see it. No. Crashes where he comes together with other riders. I think people are a bit blinkered in that they've got opinions or fans of other riders and are trying to, and you know, you said that Leon was a magnet for crashes. Well, Jonathan in some ways can be too. But
there wasn't a criticism of Leon. I mean, he's
I agree.
An innocent party.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes it's his teammate that's been giving him a nudge. But I mean, I absolutely jumped on Jonathan at Donington Park for the pass up the inside.
Which was not his fault.
No, and Jules and you both said, look at it from the other angles. And when I calmed down and looked at it, it was like, actually, there is a massive gap there. And as Jonathan quoted the famous Senna quote, if you're not going to go for a gap, you can no longer call yourself a racer. So, yeah, absolutely. Hats off to him. I would love to see him come across the MotoGP paddock and do well. He has got a real talent, you know, and he does seem to have calmed down a little bit from some of his early days where he was, well, there's not a gap there, but I'm going to make one. And I think that has definitely been tempered.
And the bit of sort of rumor that I dropped with the conversation with James about the factory bike switching from potentially the Repsol squad to LCR for Brattle. So he's got a factory bike underneath the LCR skins. I've heard that from a couple of sources now, and not Italians or Spaniards. So,
yeah. Well, I know you guys mentioned it, and you were hoping to be able to possibly get hold of Licio Ceccanello and ask him, but
I'm still working on that. Yeah. But I mean, I don't think Lucio would even. He might tell me. I've sent him a couple of emails and got one back where he was non-committal, and so I've sent another one that tried to make him committal. Yeah. But you know, to be honest, he may not know yet either. Where's our next GP race?
Misano.
Okay. Yes, Misano.
Which is now, of course, the circuit, the Marco Simoncelli, which is a nice.
It is. But you know, the schedule has been so crazy, and I've kind of been out of touch. What have we got going on this coming weekend?
Absolutely nothing.
Oh wow! Shoot.
I'm afraid. Yeah, we've got. World Superbike are on their break.
Okay.
So,
right.
World Superbike are having their reasonably long break. Then we've got Misano is next, and then we have Aragon, I think.
Are you Brits up to anything?
Yes, there is. Yeah, I'm gonna have to get back to you on that one. I'm just bringing it up now. I'm trying to remember what's next. I think Donington.
Ah, nice.
Donington okay. Might be on this weekend. Donington might be on this weekend. That might be some. Right, let me just have a look. We have got. No, we've got. Sorry, I'm talking complete nonsense. Next, Sam Misano is the next MotoGP race. Before then, we've got the Nürburgring, which is not. That is this coming weekend, World Superbikes, and Donington Park BSB.
It's kind of sad. You think we would know these things, but I think at a certain point where both Jules and I get completely jacked up from going to so many races, and you've been off walking a zillion miles, which I will give you.
How well have I done? Not.
I will give you your 3 minutes of fame shortly. Hold on, please. that we can't remember where the fuck the races are coming up. And it's I think part of it is just from us being so exhausted. It's strange that that, you know, and actually very serious tip of the hat to the people who do this for a living. Those of us that do it as a sideline and as a, I don't know, a professional hobby, if you will. Well, I guess we can be excused for not keeping up because we have to go to our regular jobs during the week. All right, Martin, let's hear about your feet, dude. The watch is turned on. The timer is clicking.
Well, the deal was that if one of our listeners or someone to do with Motorpod were able to push us over the £30,000 online donations line, then I would limit myself to 3 minutes. And Jim, thank you very much. You were the man who pushed us over that line. It was amazing. It's now on my podium of life experiences, up there with getting married and passing my pilot's course. And this, if you don't count birth, because without that, you know, it's kind of the basic enabling factor for all of it. It was incredible. If anyone wants to see what it's like, if you go to Facebook and it's going to be tricky. You're going to have to search Kethernum Line, which is Welsh for walk on.
I want to hear you read the name of that website.
It's kethernumline.com. And I can now say fluently, mein drwth geni dwythem in siarap Cymraeg, which means I'm sorry, but I can't speak Welsh, which is ironic because I've just said it in Welsh.
I actually sat there yesterday for a moment and was pronouncing the name of your service, that being the Wales Air Ambulance Service, in Welsh. And I think I got proud of myself. I'd have to look at it again. I wasn't even trying to do it ad hoc. But
Ambulance Amir Cymraeg.
Okay. Yeah, and it actually made sense in a way.
Yeah, it does. And it is. We were immersed in Welshness. I was immersed in Welshness. And there is a myth amongst English tourists and non-Welsh speaking Welsh that if you go to the northwest of Wales particularly, they'll speak Welsh just to annoy you. No, they speak Welsh because that's what they speak. No one goes to France and gets upset that the French talk French to each other. It's exactly the same. It is their language. It's their culture. We had absolutely amazing. The presenter who was doing a lot of the television coverage of us, a girl called Ellen Fleur Llewellyn, amazing singer and very talented young lady.
Was that a brunette, kind of tasty looking?
No. There were. This was very tasty looking blonde.
Okay.
And Ellen introduced a song and said, and this song has particular, and then hesitated and had to speak to someone in Welsh, couldn't remember the English word for significance. And it really hit me. I thought, English is their second language. But it is an incredible community of communities, Wales. And some Ponzi philosopher once said that the greatest strength and kindness you can have is to be a friend to a stranger. And all we met over 200 miles of walking with friends everywhere. It was absolutely incredible. If anybody out there is thinking, I want to go and do something nuts, just go and do it. It does take a lot of organization. But if it's something like this, I tell you what, it's the cheapest holiday I've ever had. All I paid for was cigarettes, and my consumption of cigarettes went down markedly. I was down to about a pack. It was lasting about 3 days. It was great. And I think I paid for one pint of Guinness. Other than that, I didn't pay for a drink or food or lodging anywhere. It was all donated by incredibly generous hoteliers and pubs and just members of the public we met.
Okay, so you were walking the equivalent of a marathon a day, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Were you smoking fags while you were doing it?
No, I limited myself to breaks.
All right.
And the photographic record does include that, because we said, now this is warts and all, blisters and all. And if you go onto the website, actually, if you go to the website, it's www.walk-on.co.uk, and it will immediately redirect you to Kethernum Line, but you don't have to spell Kethernum Line.
Yeah. All right. So your 3 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
No, it was epic. It was lovely. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it looks like we're going to do it again next year.
Good. Well, then I think you should double it up so that you actually have a real challenge ahead of you. Then we'll half the amount of time that you get to talk about
it. Well, we're going to do it as a three-legged race the whole way.
I'm going to leave that comment alone.
Yeah. Anyway, looking forward, we have got Nürburgring, and it is one of my favorite World Superbike tracks, largely because we have had some incredible finishes there. I don't know if people remember Norrie Hager, Ryuichi Kiyonari, and I can't remember who the third rider was, who crossed the line, three of them within like a thousandth of a second of each other. It was absolutely nuts about 3-4 years ago. But they've also, where they've got, when they come around that final corner, it's a bit like watching Mark Miller at Macau. It's like heads nearly rubbing against the inside wall.
Yeah.
You're like, dude, move away from that. You're going to erode your helmet or abrade your helmet down to your skull. It's just crazy.
So that's good to look at. Martin, I just had a special delivery of a ice cold Foster's by my dear heart, one Ellie Lightfoot. So you can say hello and I will pass on the hellos to you.
Hello, Ellie.
He says hello.
Hello, Martin.
Hey, how you doing?
She says, how you doing? All right, she can't hear you, so only I can, and she was very embarrassed, so you tuck yourself out of here.
you tough old pioneering folk up in the hills with you.
Yeah, okay.
She's off to chop some fire for the woods, fire.
Yeah, she just went to Safeway, the local market. It's our Tesco's. here you go. There we go. All right.
Oh, yeah. A double delivery.
Yes, double delivery.
We've got right. BSB at Donington Park. Everyone's hoping that Shaky will be fit for it.
What is the word on that? Because I heard his injury was a little bit more severe than people thought.
Yeah, it was a shoulder. Now, I've got to be honest, with the walk and the recovery for the walk and then going back to work and all sorts going on, I haven't actually done the amount of research I would have liked to have done. But I believe they thought it was just dislocated and now they think it might be a fracture. But that's a problem because it's function rather than pain. Having said that, there's then 2 weeks to Assen, and Shaky is definitely in the shootout. He cannot be knocked out to seventh place. So he and Tommy Hill and Josh Brooks, I believe, are the ones that are nailed on. And then the other three places are still up for a fight.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, and you Brits or people even more continental than that will remind me that the BSB is when you mention Assen, this is what I'm talking about, Martin.
Yeah.
The BSB folks have run outside of the island of the UK in the past, but this is the first time in quite some time that they've done so. And it's kind of neat. So, that will be, and I applaud them for doing so because it broadens the horizon and broadens the exposure of the series.
Yeah, and I'm guessing we'll have some Dutch wildcards from their national series. So
that'll be an
interesting. But the same weekend as that, we got Portimao, and I love that track. Portimao World Superbikes. The week after that, BSB got a Silverstone for the penultimate round, and we are at Aragon with MotoGP. And then October, we got the first thing in October on its standalone, which is nice, is Manicourt. So it's the final World Superbike round. The following weekend, we start that run of three flyaways on MotoGP. So it's Japan, Malaysia, Australia. And same weekend as Japan, we've got Brands Hatch final BSB round. And then obviously they come back 2 weeks after Phillip Island to go to Valencia, which could, the way it's looking, might actually have meaning. Because Danny is coming like a very slow but unavoidable missile, sort of. I can't think of a suitable, like a Scud.
Oh, I can. Oh no, he's more like a Stinger.
Yeah,
yeah.
But he is definitely on it this year. And as one of our listeners said, they're looking forward to the Lorenzo fanboy coming back and acknowledging that. Yeah, no, Danny did him, and that was the surprise.
What's the bottom line, Martin, that when we talk about Danny in years past, the times where he has not been able to get the job done, the job wasn't done because Danny was injured. Danny has been completely uninjured. He started the season this year healthy, and he's carried on through the season. If he can stay healthy throughout the end of the season, there's no doubt that we're going to be looking at a serious battle going down to the last race.
And it's an interesting point because he's always, since he's been in MotoGP, it seems, he's either injured or just recovered from an injury,
right,
or he's about to have the next one. And that might be a reason for the perceived timidity of his riding, that he wouldn't mix it up. Once someone went past him, that was it. You could dismiss him, which was, and this worries me to say it, but this was a bit like Julian Simon and Bradley Smith in Julian Simon's championship in the 125s, where Bradley could mix it with him, But once Julien Simon got past, it was like, well, that's that then. Bradley wouldn't get back. And then occasionally he'd surprise us. But Danny really seems to be, and he seems to be enjoying his riding. I don't, one of you guys quoted Beth Andrews, I think, of from Twitter, just saying, you know, he should smile more. I've never seen him smile so much.
Yeah. I know. He's Jolly Rancher. I mean, it's amazing. And I think that, well, okay, the bottom line, and Jules kind of mentioned it in the last week's show, is that it's a lot easier to smile when you don't feel like shit. I mean, and so that's the case. And it's a testament to him, and perhaps a, what's the term I'm looking for? A reminder to us to not underestimate guys when they're injured. This is a brutal sport. And if you're hurting, your performance is not going to be up to snuff. And we expect these guys to, in some ways, to overcome the damage that they do to their bodies and their psyche at the same time, because that's definitely a combined thing. But when you see somebody like Danny Pedrosa in a full fit condition, and at the same time, it's clear that mentally he's a happy guy. And we saw it at Laguna. We saw it at Indy. You saw it at Silverstone. That is the way to go. Now, I think we're going to have, I hope, if this all comes through, and I think it will, we'll have one of us, perhaps Lynn, covering Aragon for us, which would be great. And so it looks like we're going to be carrying out the rest of the year pretty well.
I have, just on the Danny and Jorge fighting to the end, let's not forget there is the other, the elephant in the room that's going to come back into the room, hopefully fit for the flyaways for the last four rounds, is Casey. And he is absolutely determined. He's been giving press conferences saying, no, the operation was really successful. I need to recover. I am coming back to see out the rest of this season, and I'm going to win again. You know,
and James seemed to think he wasn't going to come back.
Yeah. I'm not sure where he's heard that from. He's like, oh, he's finished, isn't he? But no.
No. And it was funny because in the press room, right after or the media center, right after Casey crashed, and then later on, I said to Jules, I said, well, if I was going to do anything and I was in Casey's shoes or boots, I would wait till PI, because PI is Casey's race, right?
Yeah. And they are week after week after week. So I guess if he feels good to go, I reckon he'll be at Motegi, but we'll see. And Misano coming up. We're expecting Colin Edwards to be on an Aprilia Art ART machine.
That is what we hear. In fact, I should probably give him a ring and see what the true nature of that story is. But that's what I hear as well.
But supposedly his piece of shit suit, the BMW, is going to go to Danilo Petrucci, who, let's face it, couldn't get any slower, I guess.
You know, give Danilo some serious props.
Oh, no, guy... I'm not saying Petrucci's the slow, but that Yoda Aprilia is, I don't know what they've done different to what the ART have done, but it is a dog. He was something like 30 kilometers an hour down. I know speed traps aren't everything, but he was, it's not his fault. You can't expect anything more from it, but.
Well, and it's a near stock motor. Which surprisingly went up in a brilliant amount of smoke at Indy on lap two. But the kid could ride, you know. That's the promise of CRTs in a way, is that you can, because who knew Denny though before the CRTs came about? I hadn't heard of him. And so that's cool.
It will be once the CRTs develop to a point where there's a bit. I mean, you know what they say: the first 5 seconds are easy to improve.
Yeah, it's
the last half second. Yeah. So once they get to a more level playing field, and those that can't keep up, you know, fall by the wayside, and others come in, and then you'll have a benchmark by which you'll be able to compare these guys, because as has been said by a number of people, you know, some of the top riders in Moto2 will be, well, I'm not going to CRT. I'm going to wait for a satellite, for a prototype ride. So those who are willing to take that jump might short track them because, you know, they're in the paddock. And
I agree.
Yep.
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff.
All right. So should I close it out?
I just think we should mention that hot off the press, I would like to thank Andy Pilbeam. Andy, your stickers will be in the post tomorrow. And thank you very much. And we did, Jim and I both received a email from Doug Edmiston. And the title is To Grand Prix or Not to Grand Prix. That is the Shakespeare reference. And I've just flicked through it, and we'll be talking about this next week because it will take us that long to read it.
And the week after.
Well, it reminds me of Bob when Doug is definitely plugging to join us as a co-host because this is exactly the route I took.
Yeah, Martin, that was the kind of emails that you used to send.
And I remember Bob saying, I've had another email from Martin Darlington. They're great. I just have to reschedule my week to fit them in. Not quite in that accent, but
you know, I think we hired you because we were getting sick of your emails.
Yeah, it didn't stop me though, did it? I still send
it didn't. And I mean that in the nicest of ways. All right. So all of you out there in Motopod land, not MotoGPOD land, can you please, people, just drop the G? Thank you all out there for downloading the show. Totally appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed the interview or interviews. Martin, thanks for joining me on a Monday evening, which is unusual for us. Middle of my day, in the middle of Labor Day, which it's strange. It's a holiday where we don't labor.
I was going to say, does it commemorate pregnancy or?
No. It's not
childbirth labor.
I know. It's all about the mantra of working your ass off. I believe it originally started based around unions, went back when unions were really strong.
There is an irony to, it's a bit like saying in fluent Welsh, I can't speak Welsh, to celebrate labor, you have a holiday.
That perhaps is the most strange correlation that I've ever heard.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for the singular donor this week. Totally awesome. Though, if you'd like to donate to the show, please do so. Trust me, very, very handy, very welcome. The purse strings are tight, and there's a possibility one or two of us may make it to another race this year, but without having the funds to do so, that ain't going to happen. You can do it through the Facebook fan page. You don't have to sign up for Facebook at facebook.com/motopod or through our website at www.motopodcast.com.
On Twitter, Jim is at Cafe Race. I am at Motopod Martin, and Jules is at Pop Monkey, but the E before the Y at the end is a 3. So it's Pop Monk 3Y.
He's weird.
Yes, he keeps promising to change that, and he hasn't. So,
well, I believe if you hit Pop Monkey without the 3, you'll still get him. It just won't be to the proper source, and you might have to figure out how to rejigger it. Anyway, fantastic. Great interview with James. Hopefully, another great interview to be included in this. But otherwise, I think we have a very solid show for this week. Martin, wonderful talking to you. It's been almost a month.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I was thinking if I don't get on soon, I'm gonna have to donate.
Oh, you could anyway. I mean, I just donated.
Well, I should. You did actually, yes. And I have done to the walk, obviously. And right. Very quick shout out, Toby Hurst and Team Mofo is, I won't even try and break that one down, is leading the Motopod Listeners League.
And I think he's, third or fourth in the overall championship?
Oh, I don't know. But yes, I'm sure with that score he is. And I just like to point out that I am leading the hosts.
So yeah, whatever. I think Toby will win this year. What is it? Like a tire pressure checker or something like that?
Yeah, no, I think it's one of those things you put under your side stand to stop it digging into the dirt. One of those little plastic circles.
Well done. I think, next year might be a pen?
No, I think next year you just get an email saying, well done.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, 4 years ago, it was an R1.
I know. Well, you know, they shot their one.
Yeah, yeah, they did, unfortunately. Yeah.
On that note, I believe it's time to go.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Jim, and good night.
Ciao.
Bye.
It
was one of the bigger ones that we'll see over here, but it's still blooming harmless. And I won't kill spiders because they're our friends. They kill flies and flies spread disease.